Big ol' Marcus.
Oh, dude.
Big ol' Marcus.
Right here.
Welcome back to the Native Ways Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Ellis.
I'm your co-host, Christian Miller.
And today we're going to talk about a topic that's pretty relative to current situation for a lot of people.
Yeah. A lot of people know about it in the community, and a lot of people don't know about it outside of that. So we're about to kind of fill y'all in with some personal experiences and kind of what we know.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, we've been dormant on the artifact stuff as far as the podcast goes. By now, we've got a few full-length YouTube videos posted that y'all can check out to kind of catch you up. But, you know, through hunting season, we were kind of focusing on that. We had talked about getting some things lined up, but didn't really work out. Those things we spoke about then are soon to come. I can assure you that. And we're excited. But today, we're going to talk about pay digs.
Yeah. And before we get started on that, don't forget to follow us on all our social medias. You can find us on pretty much everything except for Snapchat. But yeah, just make sure you keep being engaged with that, and we will continue to put out as good content as we can.
Yeah, and then we want to remind y'all, you know, the more y'all engage, the more we appreciate it. And we've got the community cash going now. We've got a few people to add up there. But so far, we've got Nathan Dickin. We've got Logan up there. We've got J. Mike that we need to add, Dalton Muser, and then most recently, Dustin Latham.
Mm-hmm.
So we just want to say that we appreciate y'all that are engaging and being a part of the community. And that's something we're going to continue to do. You know, y'all show us engagement. We're going to support y'all. We have things coming up. Me and Christian have been in the works talking about doing, offering some things more to our followers and things like that. So, you know, when we get to that point, we'll notify y'all.
Right. Yeah. The bigger we grow, the more that y'all be informed.
Yeah.
So bigger announcements, bigger things coming, you know, obviously the bigger we get, the bigger it's going
to
get.
Yeah, absolutely. And we want to reward y'all for, you know, helping us get where we're trying to go. But, last thing before we get into the podcast is shout out to Texas Cash. By now they've released the most recent issue. This is the most recent prior to the issue dropping tomorrow. And also Dancing Dogs, they just dropped a new drop up there. They got the new Brindle Bay. I'm rocking one of my favorite hats so far, Roadrunner. Anybody that knows me knows I love Roadrunners and the luck that they carry. I'm very superstitious, and I absolutely love Roadrunners.
Yeah, so, the Bo Brooks of the Roadrunner.
Yeah. Speaking of Roadrunners, we got something we're stewing up, if we can make it happen, that I think is going to be pretty cool. But y'all will not know what that is. But with that being said, we're going to get into it. So pay digs. Right now, you know, springtime, we just finished pretty much hunting season. Turkey season still going on. But once deer season ends is when pay digs really start kicking up. Pay digs, public digs, whatever you want to call them. We're not going to talk specifics on anybody's operation as to how they go about it. But people in the community do know what pay digs are, and basically it is a way for you know, the public to get into a private area and find artifacts through a connection to a landowner. Normally they have a lease agreement, something along those lines, and they extend that to the public for you to come out and dig with them.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people, including myself, don't have the opportunity to go on somewhere private that they have access to. So, you know, for some people, this is kind of the only opportunity they have in finding an artifact. And for the longest time, I was in that same boat. So, you know, it's kind of where I started out, and kind of where we still do, you know, here and there. But, you know, luckily we found some stuff to, you know, get away from that. Not like there's anything against it, but, you know, we have some personal stuff that we're able to experience now. But yeah, as far as the pay digs go and everything, or the, you know, public digs, it's a really good opener to getting into the community. You learn a lot of things. You see a lot of people, which we'll talk about more. But yeah, if you haven't done it, you know, it's strongly recommended, especially for, you know, some younger kids sometimes, depending on where you go. But, you know, either way,
yeah,
it's a good time.
Yeah. And we're going to talk through, you know, different things like what y'all need, what to expect going into a pay dig, especially if you've never been. Some of y'all may not have. A lot of y'all probably have. And then we're going to talk about, you know, things that I look for in a pay dig or a public dig, whatever you want to call them. And yeah, so as far as that goes, you know, I don't tell, or I wouldn't recommend anybody to not go to one. If it's an opportunity to find an arrowhead and, you know, it's something that's produced, I would say to go. Any opportunity is better than no opportunity. You can't find them if you ain't trying. So
yeah,
I don't put down anybody's operation by any means. I haven't dug with everybody that's out there, but I've dug with a lot of them, and everybody I've dug with has been stand up people. So I can tell you that, and we'll talk about the specific ones that I've been to, that Christian's been to. And again, I'm not going to put down anybody's operation ever. What they do and what landowners do together, that's between them. But yeah, so we'll get right into it with the equipment that you need to pay dig.
Yeah, so pretty much from the basics going out, you know, what I've always brought from what I've learned, you know, a pair of good gloves usually goes a long way. I kind of use the Milwaukee ones quite a bit. They seem to kind of stand or withstand the elements a little bit better. They don't rip and they don't tear as easy. And you can still actually be able to feel pretty decently with them. So, you know, good pair of gloves, you know, shrimp rakes, stuff like that. Definitely better for like the hill country stuff, clearing the table out. You know, you get a lot of gravel, you get a lot of rock and a bunch of stuff that's on the table that, you know, you'll just tear up your hands eventually just moving as much. So that's a couple things that I can name for sure.
Yeah. And so, you know, those of y'all that aren't into this, if you need links on where to go or what to buy or anything like that, feel free to reach out to us. We'll include some links. I know Gene Tolbert normally sells shrimp rakes through his deal. You can find them online too. I don't remember where I purchased the ones I've got, but I bought them years ago and they've lasted a long time. There's also a few guys in the community that custom make them. So, you know, reach out to one of them too. You can also make your own. Anything really works. It's just an extension to reach across the table and pull stuff off easier than doing it by hand. Basically a rake type thing, but with a flat edge.
Mm.
But gloves, definitely important. The first pay dig I ever went on, you know, I had no idea what I was going into. I say pay dig as far as a screen dig. There's different types, and we can talk about those a little more in depth later too. There's hand digs and screen digs, and then there's also shaker digs. I'm very well versed in hand digging, but going into the screening world, had no idea what I was doing, so I went in there unknowingly. First time ever I went out was with J Mike and Quade at San Saba. It was an excellent site, and we showed up as me, Nathan, and his brother. We showed up, and we just had, you know, lunch, typical stuff. No canopy, no chairs, no gloves, nothing, no shrimp rakes. We get there, and we're talking to Mike, and this is the first time I'd ever met him. Super nice guy. Anybody that knows J. Mike knows he's a great dude. Same with Quade. Both just excellent guys. And Mike's like, what all did y'all bring? I was like, oh, you know, this and that. Didn't even have bread. I'll put it to the... We had planned to make sandwiches, and I figured we could get bread in the town of San Saba, but apparently at 7 a.m., convenience stores don't have bread. You can't buy it from Subway. So what I ended up doing was buying these little package sandwiches that were like $8 a piece, which sucked.
Oh, yeah. The ones that you don't know what time they're made or what.
Yeah, 100%. Probably got salmonella from them. But anyway, so, you know, very underprepared. And he's like, y'all ain't even got gloves? It's like, no, but we'll be all right. You know, we're, you know, pretty tough. That's what we thought. He's like, boys, y'all need gloves. And I was like, nah, we'll be good. So we start digging, and we quickly found out we needed gloves. And thankfully, Mike's prepared for that and has extra gloves for people and stuff. That doesn't mean to take advantage of that situation, because they may have been his gloves. I have no idea. But he let us use some gloves while we dug. So gloves, shrimp rake is kind of not as important, but gloves are definitely, I would say, a necessity. Another thing to think about is most places you're digging, you know, some places might be on the river and might have big canopy trees over top of you. Other places might be out in the middle of wide ass open.
Mm-hmm.
So a canopy is really important. I normally buy one canopy a year. You go to Academy, they're like $40-$50. And maybe more than that now. I haven't bought one this year. But just a little canopy put over top of you that you don't mind getting torn up, because it's going to get torn up. that's pretty essential, you know, sunblock. What would you say as far as, you know, clothing and stuff, Christian?
Well, I mean, I've worn steel toe boots, which sometimes, you know, you get the clods fall off the table, they hit you in the foot, and you'll get bigger rocks, you know, midden rocks, stuff like that will fall off the table, hit you. So, I mean, I've worn steel toe boots, but over time, you know, working the dirt, working the loads and whatnot, you kind of get heavy and they get tiring, and they don't have the best soles unless you got some really good work boots. But anyways, that's what I've been wearing. And typically jeans. I don't like to wear shorts because I get too much grit everywhere. Jeans kind of cut down on all that stuff. As far as shirts go, typically I wear like a lighter, you know, most of the time it's kind of hot outside, so lighter long sleeve shirt with the hood on it. Kind of, for me, it's almost essential to have a hood because I get burned up so easy. And dude, if I don't put on sunblock, it's like I look like a freaking cherry in an hour. It's bad. I got ginger skin, which I'm sure Richard knows about.
Nope.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like a fishing shirt, something like that. And then obviously a ball cap, or, you know, some people even like to look like Jurassic Park, kind of like one of those hats.
Yeah, the safari hat type bucket, yeah, hats.
The archaeologist special.
Yeah. We actually, kind of a funny deal, my mom and my aunt, they went down to San Antonio and they bought me and my dad, my uncle, and then my dad and uncle's best friend, Luke. They bought us all matching, they're like palm leaf hats, but they're like sombreros. And they got them for us to dig in. And honestly, they're pretty excellent for that. They're light. They cover you up really good. But they just look goofy as hell.
Yeah. I mean, I don't try to be stylish, but there's times for it, for sure.
Well, I don't want to look like a damn goofball.
That's right. I remember going, you know, hunting back when I was a kid, and my grandpa, he's real old school. He just likes to wear everything that works, you know, that has its purpose, which in that case, you know, would be a bigger hat for what we were doing as far as digging. But I was trying to match all my camo. You know, it was like one of the biggest things that I couldn't have, like, mixed matching camo for some reason. And he'd always be like, "What, you going to impress somebody?" And I'm like, "No, I mean, it's just kind of a mental thing, you know? You might not go out there trying to, it's not going to do anything different, but you want to still look good. It's like mental."
Yeah, 100%. Said.
But anyways, besides that fact, what we have found out is if you have the time, bring a Blackstone.
Yep.
Could be a game changer.
Check that out in the videos at the end of this podcast. Check it out.
Yeah, check out our YouTube.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to see it. Subtle but plug. Yeah, so, you know, kind of a teaser if you don't watch it, which I hope you do. We made some Hawaiian pastor tacos at the
most recent dig
that we had done. And in all honesty, that was a complete game changer from like a hot tuna sandwich sometimes. But anyways, I always like to cook. So for me, that's kind of cool to do when you have the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And at a lot of these public deals, you know, some of them will include lunch. Some of them, it's on your own. Generally, you know, if you know somebody going, y'all can bring a grill or something and make sausage wraps. Or we normally just take stuff to make sandwiches, and we make sandwiches, eat some chips, drinks. Mm-hmm. Make sure you have plenty of water, a cooler full of ice. I would say to take 2 cases of water, depending on how many people you got, because you will run out of water. We've done that.
If you think you have enough, you probably don't.
Yeah.
Especially when it's hot.
Yeah. During the summertime, you're going to blow through some water. I like to bring chairs now, which I'd try to pack as light as possible, but I like to bring chairs now because between loads, you know, if it's kind of slow, sit down in the chair, get off your feet, because it's 8 hours up on your feet, you know, it takes a toll on you pretty quick.
Yeah.
So it's nice to be able to sit down, and then at lunchtime, you got something to sit on too. We like to bring speakers. I mean, this is non-essential stuff. The essentials really are the water, gloves, and something to eat would be what I would say.
Yeah. I mean, you can make do with pretty much anything you got. This is just like the premium version that we're throwing at you right now. Like, if you have it all and if you have the time and room and whatever, like, this is everything that you could bring.
Yeah.
I'd say probably a folding table.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to put all your stuff on a table, or a bucket to put stuff in. You'll pull up to a dig for the first time and you'll see somebody that's been doing it for 25 years and they'll have all kinds of stuff. And, you know, don't be intimidated if you just show up with a freaking pair of gloves and a shrimp rake. I mean, who knows what's going to be found by who. And that guy that brings, you know, looks like he knows what's going on and everything, he might not find a dang thing and he might move the least dirt out of anybody. Mm-hmm. So, which it doesn't matter. It's not an appearance thing. Just go in there. You're going there for you. And for the most part, you know, it is a community. So most people are pretty accepting to it. And then there's some people that are there strictly, you know, to dig and not talk to anybody. And, you know, they'll stay in their lane. So, but some of the best people you'll meet be at Paydig too. I've met some really good friends. Actually, Roland, we had him on here, him and his son, Sharkwater Outdoors. I met Roland at a Paydig, Barksdale. It was the first time I'd ever met him. We actually talked about that in that episode with them. So check that out. But yeah, so equipment, I mean, pretty much whatever you want. I also, during the summer, I like to pack a thing of pickles, pickle juice. That way, you know, kind of prevent cramps. Sometimes bring bananas. I almost always buy a big powder jug of Gatorade and then mix that in our waters throughout the day just to keep electrolytes and some sugar in our body.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's really about it for equipment, I would think.
Right.
So from there, I would say what to expect. When you go into a public dig, like I just said a minute ago, you know, you're going to see people of all shapes, forms, sizes digging. There's people that are hardcore diggers. There's people that are just, you know, hobbyists that go every now and then. There's people that are there to collect, to sell, to do whatever. So you're going to see all different types of people. And again, some will be very friendly. Some will be very standoffish. There's very tight-knit groups in the digging community, which if you're a part of, you know that. And if you're not, you will know that if you decide to join it.
Mm-hmm.
Christian and I, that's been our whole goal with this, is to be open to people and be honest with people regarding whatever, whether it be hunting, digging, whatever. We do keep a tight group, but we're not afraid to talk to somebody, give them our advice or what we think. And if you run into us at a dig, we're more than happy to talk to anybody. You know, I'm not a standoffish person. Neither is Christian.
Yeah, my face might tell you different, but I'm pretty
got a little bit of that
pretty
RBF.
Decent guy if you get to talking.
Yeah, he's all right. But so you know, the first thing would be the environment. There's different people, all different demographics, and what you should know going into a public dig is you're there to move the dirt. So if you're at a high quality dig, there's normally going to be higher grade diggers, I would say, people that are more into the hobby, that are very about finding points, and it's going to be buttholes and elbows all day, pretty much. Nice people, but you're going to be getting after it. Everybody there's going to be getting after it. The operator's going to be getting after it. I mean, it's going to be fast and furious. Some of the not as high grade digs, they'll be a little more laid back. I mean, the operators are still going to be, you know, pushing to get you dirt. But it's not going to be as intense and there's not going to be as much stuff being found. You know, it's just part of it. So you learn to judge what type of dig it is that you're going on prior to. But that determines the environment. I mean, those digs, when it's hot and heavy and, you know, a lot of good diggers there, the machines are running 24/7. The operators aren't getting in a break. It's going to get dusty. It's going to get nasty. So be prepared for that. You know, it's not something I really ever think to bring, but like goggles, things like that. There's been some digs that if I had a pair of goggles, it would have been great. Or a face mask.
Yeah.
But so be prepared for any environment. Fast pace, you know, dirty. Yeah, but it's going to be fun. And then, so the environment is really set, I would say, by the operator. So whoever's operating the dig kind of sets the tone of the dig.
Mm.
I've been to some that are very laid back and, you know, not very fast paced, like we were saying a minute ago. And they kind of set that tone from the beginning by their demeanor, and that's how they approach the dig themselves. Then I've been to some, like Mike and Quade, you're going to get there, tables are going to be loaded, and it's going to be go, go, go from the time you get there. They may say the dig starts at 8, and you get there, and tables are loaded. They're not expecting you to wait around.
Yeah.
Then I've been to some digs that if they say it starts at 8, it starts at 8, and it's going to end at 5.
Right.
So.
Yeah, there's a lot of different types. You know, everybody has their own way of doing things. Everybody has their own personality, and that's a lot of things that you'll run into is, you know, just expect anything because you don't know, especially if you don't know the person.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going in to do it fresh like me, Richard already had, you know, prior knowledge to how stuff is ran. I didn't really know. So, you know, sometimes you go into it and they're kind of already expecting you to know exactly what to do.
Yeah.
Not really explaining much about what's going on or what to do or what to expect during that day. And then sometimes, you know, they'll have a meeting before you even go out there of their expectations at their specific place, you know, what to expect and stuff like that. And, you know, maybe even discussing payment of like when they're going to take it or something like that. So
however they may do it. I mean,
right.
Yeah. And there's different types too. You know, there's private and then there's totally public. Like there's some that are just completely private, invite only. And those are generally the good ones, and they're a lot more exclusive. So if you get invited to those, you know, feel good about it and go have fun. But another thing being said is, you know, the operators are going to have a set of rules generally. And like Christian said, generally there will be a meeting beforehand, and they're going to discuss their expectations and you know, have you fill liability forms, all that stuff, because it's an agreement between them and the landowner. And ultimately, what they're going to tell you is what is going to be the safest operation for them. So, you know, if they've got a set of rules, don't, you know, you're there because of them. So respect what they're asking and dig the way they ask you to dig. Don't question it. Don't be a prick. You know, you may not like what they have to say, but that's part of it. Right. And as you get to know the operators, you'll form relationships with them. I mean, some of the operators that I've dug with are some really good friends now. Mike is one of my good friends. I would say Tanner is a pretty good friend. I don't know Ray all that great, but I've dug with Ray. I've dug with Gene once. But, I mean, I've dug with a lot of different people and at a lot of different places, and each one of them is different. Each one has a different set of rules, but at the end of the day, it's all the same concept and all the same end goal. It's mm-hmm. fine points, really.
Right.
So, you know, freaking Newton. So, anyways, you're going to go into it, and I guess another deal would be your mindset going into it. Don't go in there and expect to, you know, find 100 pieces in a day.
Yeah.
Don't expect to go in there and find absolutely nothing. I mean, it is digging. It's not finding or getting or whatever you want to call it. You know, you've got to work for them, and it's not a guarantee. So right. If you go to one of these, don't expect anything to be given to you.
Yeah. I would say that's a big thing, is that don't have an expectation of what things are going to be like. Just have an open mind of, or, you know, be open to anything that happens. Because, you know, if you go into it thinking that you're going to find a certain thing, like you're going to find a killer, you're going to find more than anybody else, whatever, and it doesn't happen, then you get upset. And then you pretty much just ruin your whole day for no reason.
Yeah.
It's not even about what you find, you know. It's to some people, that's all it's about, right? But, you know, to me, it's about finding that one piece that could be a broke, that could have been something cool, or could have been a killer. You know, like one of my favorite ones that I've found personally was broke. And I was like, dude, I wish I knew what that was too. You know, it was the midsection going up to the tip, and you can kind of tell what it could have been or what would have been with the flaking and whatnot. But you're like, dude, I wish I would have seen that thing whole, because it would have been freaking a killer.
Yep.
And that's just one of the coolest things, is it's the curiosity that drives the boat.
Yep.
For me, and should be kind of for a lot more people.
Yeah, it should. A lot of people get too hung up in the monetary value of this stuff and all that. And in my opinion, that's never been my goal with any of this. I mean, I've never sold a personal find, never will. You can try. It would take a hell of an offer for me to sell something.
Yeah.
I go into it for the experiences and the memories. I mean, I do this with all my best friends, my dad, you know. So every time I go on a dig, I'm there to see what happens. I'm there for the collecting factor of it, but I'm also there to make the memories with my friends. Because once you know, as much as it sucks to say, one day my dad's going to be gone. And if I don't make these memories with him now, you know, I don't get to make them later. So I take that as my perspective. My dad's buddy Luke, my uncle Ryan, you know, Christian one day. One of us will be gone, so one of us isn't going to have to make those memories together anymore. So that's the way I look at that. Every day is a new memory to be made.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not given, just like hunting. So go in there with the mindset, you know, you're there to have a good time and appreciative of the opportunity, because if you're not, you're not going to have a good time.
Right.
Some of the most fun digs I've been on, didn't find much. I mean, me and my uncle Ryan, we went down to Barksdale to a killer camp, and a lot of andice and, you know, lagunas, things like that were being found, Kerrville knives, just some really killer stuff. And we get down there, and I found a bunch of pieces that day. I found like 6 broke andice through the whole day, none with ears, sadly. I found a really nice broke Angostura, a bunch of really nice broke pieces, but nothing whole the entire day. That's not the operator's fault. That's not the dig's fault. You know, that's my luck that day. Ryan found pretty much whole, I mean, exquisite bell, tiny little bit of the tip gone, but super nice. But, you know, yeah, him and I drove down there together the night before. You know, it was a great experience. Just me and him getting to go and have a good time together. Got to spend time with my uncle like, you know, you don't always get to do. I remember vividly on the drive down there, we had stopped outside the YO ranch on the way down and stopped to use the restroom. And we stepped out and just happened to look up while doing what we needed to do. And just the most beautiful scene of stars in the sky you could have asked for, which is really, really kind of a funny story to tell now, thinking that we're looking up at stars while pissing on the side of the road in front of the YO ranch.
Yeah.
But we talk about that often. You know, we'd be like, man, that memory, weird memory to have. You're pissing side by side on the road, but beautiful memory to have as far as the stars go. And then
everything beyond the
pissing part. Besides the pissing. But
I mean, it could have been a wonderful piss. Wow. You never know. I mean, you have those ones where, you know, especially after like in the movie theater.
Yeah.
You get like out and you're like, minutes. Dude, that was probably the best feeling of my life.
Yeah, that's about it. Could have been one of those. It was one of those.
Yeah.
But, you know, we finished the drive down there and then we go and dig the next day. And I mean, just, it was a good time. And stuff you'll talk about forever. And that's the point of these digs. And, you know, any dig, private, public, pay, however you want to do it, that's the whole goal. So, and if you have a different mindset or a different initiative, that's fine too. It is what it is. You're welcome to your own deal, but that's how I look at it. So, going into these with that mindset, the mindset's the biggest thing. Because, again, if you go in there expecting to find something, it's not going to happen. And it could be the slowest day of your life, but you might make some of the best memories while you're there. And then you might have the best day of your life. You never know. So that would be what I'd say there is, you know, have a good mindset. Don't expect anything. From that point, a lot of people too, you know, if they're not having a good day, they start to blame the operators or whatever. Now, again, I've never been on a dig where an operator didn't do what they were supposed to, in my opinion. I've never had one that I thought did anything unfair. So don't go pointing fingers at the operator just because you're not having the luck that day. And I mean, it happens like that. Christian got to see it this weekend. We had a little private dig and we had 2 tables out there. And I don't know what it was, but all the good stuff was hitting mine and Cole's table. And all the brokes and pooter stuff was hitting Christian and Canyon's table.
Yeah.
And it just happens like that. I mean, I've been at pay digs where public digs, however you want to say it, the person next to me, they're finding everything. Every look, bow, bow, bow. And then we're not finding anything all day. That's just roll of the dice. I mean, that's how it goes. You can't control it. If you're meant to find them, you're meant to find them. So mindset's a big thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just holding back the fact that as much dirt as I've moved, you know, I've still found a bunch of stuff. But I just know that the day's coming, I'm going to probably find something better than
it's going to.
Something. I don't know. It's going to be something good, I think.
Yeah, it's
you know,
going
it's to. It's a long time coming.
Yeah,
I think when I do find one, like I said, it's going to be freaking killer, I hope.
You've definitely paid your dues, so it's time. It's going to happen soon. But, so with that being said, I would say the next deal is, we'll talk about this, then we'll talk about our experiences. What to look for in a pay dig or a public dig, whatever. However it goes for you, if you get invited to a pay or invited to a public or whatever. What I would say is, the first thing I'm looking for, especially if I'm paying, is the quantity and the quality. Most of all, quality over quantity. The one dig I went to the most, I found the least amount of points out of any dig I've been to, but I kept going because of the quality and the chance of what I might find there. And talking about it, y'all will know, you know, 2-inch perdees, giant harahays, etched mussel shells and rib bones and bone beads and owl pendants and, you know, just crazy stuff. And even though I didn't ever really do too great there, I kept going back, and I have some excellent memories from that site. Got to see my dad pull a 2.25-inch perdiz off of that place. One of my uncles found a shell pendant. I hand dug a pretty nice blade. My buddy Nathan had some excellent days out there. So, you know, it's not always about the quantity rather than the quality. I would take the quality over the quantity.
Yeah, for sure.
And you'll see, you know, new digs come up and they'll post a bunch of pictures, and it might be a bunch of, you know, stuff that I would put on top of my little display that I've got in the living room if it's decent enough, or a bunch of stuff that I'd throw in my flower beds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I collect every piece that I find, but that doesn't mean I display it the same way. Yeah. Monos, preforms, you know, broke stuff like that. I'll put them in my flower bed. Kind of cool. See them later, but
yeah, I kind of got like a little mocajete bowl.
Yeah.
It's got stuff in it.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a pile of pieces sitting right here next to us right now
mm-hmm.
that I just cleaned out of my case from when we dug Comanche last, which has been a while.
Yeah. Which it'll all kind of, you know, as you progress, it'll all start moving different places, it seems like. You know, because I've found some more stuff since what I've had in my frame. I found some different stuff that I've moved out and, you know, put in that pooter pile,
mm-hmm.
you might want to call it.
Yeah, pooter pile.
So, I like that. You know, having like my pooter pile, my pretty mid pile.
Pretty mid.
And then my decently mid pile, yeah. Or decently mid frame.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I got going on. And then, you know, you'll move up the ranks and you'll actually have a frame like this one day, which will happen.
Yeah, it will, 100%. You just got to stay committed.
But you got to you got to be out there to find them, so.
Yep. But, so, just because you're seeing a dig posting a bunch of stuff doesn't mean it's a good dig. And that doesn't mean, also, if you're seeing a dig that posts a bunch of stuff that's lower quality, that you can't go out there and find a killer either. I mean, you absolutely can. Every camp's going to put something good out. There's,
mm-hmm.
I've never seen one that doesn't. But, you know, it's got to be your day, and you're meant to find it. That being said, me, as a paying consumer, I'm going to try to pick the dig that benefits me the best, or I have the highest potential of finding something good. So I'm going to pick something that's quality over quantity, unless I can find a middle ground for both. Or if you have the luck to find a extremely killer camp that puts out a ton of quality, that's even better.
Yeah.
But those are few and far between, and most people know them as invite only. So when you get those opportunities, take them. They're going to be more expensive, but they're going to be worth it. One of the digs I've been on, I found some of my best pieces on in multiple trips. I got to see some crazy things found, and it was pretty expensive, but it was well worth the time, and I would dig with that guy again and again and again and again, because the camps he gets you in are dumb. That being said, I generally settle for the middle ground camps where I can go and find a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, you never know when your day is going to be. Some of the slowest days have been some of my best days, and some of my fastest days have been some of my worst days. I've had days where I went and found a ton of stuff and didn't find anything good. I've had days where I went and found two pieces and found some of my best stuff. So I wouldn't say to be scared of anything, but be selective. Don't just go to the first thing you see. But if your only option is to go to one, well, I wouldn't say not to go. If you've got a few to select from, you know, pick wisely. But if you don't turn anything down either. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. It also just depends on where you're at in your journey of being somewhat of a collector or just a finder. You know, some people just want to find something. You know, they don't, especially starting out.
Yeah, 100%. You
know, some people just want to find something. They don't necessarily care or know or as knowledgeable about it. So you never know, you know, who's going to be there.
Yeah.
Or what level they are in their journey.
Absolutely. So that's how I would look at expectations as far as how to select one to go to. Again, I'm personally going to pick quality over quantity every time, but if I can find a middle ground, that's good for me. Y'all do as you please. Any digging is better than no digging. I've already said that. Can't find them if you ain't there.
Yeah.
So that's that. Last thing we're going to talk about before we kind of wrap this up is just the different types of digging and some of our experiences. So again, there's hand digs, screen digs, and shaker digs. There's not very many hand digs offered often, but one of the best digs I've ever been on was a pay-to-hand dig camp. It was Steve Moon's. A lot of people know about that camp. It was most recently dug by Nick Carter. The big giant Montel in the center of the frame is from there. I hand dug it. We got a whole episode on that. So check that out. But that being said, you know, every time we went there, it was killer stuff. Somebody walked away with, you know, something just well worth the time. It was like $60 to dig that place per day to hand dig, which is kind of the higher end of hand digging, but it was well worth it. I guess we could talk equipment as far as hand digging because we haven't talked about that.
Hmm.
The things that I use when I hand dig, if I'm digging in hard ground, I use an Estwing Paleo pick. You can buy them on Amazon. They're like $80. They're blue. They've got a real nice bit on the back of them for chopping roots and stuff, but you can swing them all day. They're lightweight, really balanced, excellent. You can move a ton of dirt with them. Next thing I carry is a wiggle pick. I made it myself. It's got a pipe handle with a pipe, like, top handle. So something to hold horizontal, something to hold vertical, so you can pry. And it's got a blade that comes out. I don't remember how long I made it. I think 14 or 16-inch blade on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you just wiggle it into the wall, and you can pop out a lot of dirt at one time, sift through it, keep plugging away. It's a lot less wear and tear on your body throughout the day. But again, that S-wing, I can swing all day if I need to. Next thing would be a shovel. You got to have a good shovel. I like to carry two different shovels. I like a short little shovel that I can keep in the hole with me, so when I'm sitting down, I can get my throw out of the way. And then I like to carry a bigger shovel once I have enough throw dirt behind me that I can turn around and just shovel it out of the hole, back out of my way, and have a clean place to dig again. I personally don't use gloves when I hand dig. I like to be able to feel in the dirt, feel in the wall. Now, that will get your hands torn up, so be prepared. You're going to grab mussel shells, snails, sharp flint. It'll cut you, and it doesn't feel good. But I personally would rather feel what's in the dirt when I'm hand digging. Digging in a camp like Steve Moon's, that dirt was really hard and it was rough on your hands, but I still preferred to not use gloves. So from there, we'd go to screen digs, which what you should expect to see there, one or two operators with skid steers going to the walls, plugging into the wall, pulling out dirt, bringing it to your table, dumping the load on your table. You sift it. Normally you're going to be on 4x8 to 5x10 tables with some sort of expanded metal on the top. They'll dump a load on there that is a skid steer bucket load of dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to sift through that, and what you find in it is what you keep. When we go on a screen dig, I try to push to move 50 to 60 loads if possible per day. So, you know, 20 to 25 before lunch. Then
with two people.
Yeah, two people. Two people on a table. Do we hit that every time? No, but most of the time, yes. And, you know, going into it as a new digger, the first dig I ever went on with Mike, screen dig, we only moved like maybe 6 loads before lunch. And Mike had come over and kind of given us a talk. And he's like, y'all should be moving more dirt than that. Which we were really leery on, you know, missing something.
Mm-hmm.
Which now, you know, I've done it enough that I realize you're not going to miss them. I mean, if you do, you don't know it to start with. But generally, you're going to see the shape before you miss it. And I've even swiped some off the table that I seen as I swiped them off.
Mm-hmm.
So I've definitely missed some. I can guarantee it. But it's all about moving dirt. So the more you move, the more chances you have, basically. It's like it's like spinning a roulette wheel, I guess.
Yeah, and it also has to do with the material you're moving.
Yep.
You know, you'd be in some real rocky, real gravelly stuff. Might take a little bit longer. Might be in some sand. That might not take it any time at all.
Yeah.
Unless it's wet, which we've experienced that before, too.
Yeah.
Not as fun.
Yeah, no, it's not, because it doesn't get through the screen very easily.
And it's heavy. Yeah.
Yeah. But, they'll dump load, you'll go through it, they'll come back, they'll clean backfill from under your table, and it's just that all day long. Just load of skid steer, da-da-da, all through the day. And then the shaker digs, it'll either be a peanut shaker, which is normally used in sand camp, which shakes horizontally, so it just basically reciprocates back and forth. And then there will be vibratory tables, which are normally used in midden-type camps, hill country, central Texas stuff, which will be a screen table with a vibrating motor under the screen that shakes the table all different directions and makes the dirt fall through. The peanut-style shakers, personally, I'm not a fan of. It's like, I don't know, you're up there and it makes me seasick. Dizzy. Yeah, it's like, it's not for me. I mean, in my... I'm not a big shaker table guy to start with. I'd prefer to hand dig out of all of them, but I will screen dig, and I'm not going to turn down a shaker table, but I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And peanut shaker is at the very bottom of my list. So take that as you will. That's nothing against the guys that run those shaker digs in those sand camps with peanut shakers. We'll definitely go on those digs too.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the quality and what's there. But it's just not my preferred method. So those are kind of the different options you have. Again, I prefer to hand dig. If there was more hand digs, I would love it. But there's not very many of them. And they're steadily getting harder to find, especially as people are starting to push shaker digs, things like that. And the main reason, I think, is A, it's hard to keep up with hand diggers. Hand diggers like to come out to a place, trash it up, jump around, pothole. It's not good. You know, get in a spot, dig through it, one wall, to dig a place correctly, hand dug, and to, you know, keep an operator happy, keep a landowner happy, requires you to not bounce around so much.
Right.
And hand diggers just don't like to do that. They don't like to sit in one spot and dig through the slow stuff, just like you would with a screen. But that's what you've got to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard for an operator to keep up with people all over their dig site while running a skid steer.
Yeah.
So that's why I think hand digs are becoming less popular as far as a public dig option. And, you know, they can charge more to run screen dig and keep all their people centralized and, yeah, dig it the way they want to dig it and in their controlled manner. So can't argue it.
You know, as technology advances and different methods start to pop up and, you know, preferable methods start to occur, then, you know, people's patience is a little bit less.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, people want to find them right now.
I
don't blame them. I want to find one every load too, but it just don't work like that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to understand that not every camp is created equally for certain. But aside from that, do we want to talk some personal experiences with pay digs or public digs? Or
yeah, I mean, we can. I'd say, I mean, my first artifact I ever found was on one. So, you know, to me, it's like I said at the beginning, it's kind of where I started. I found some stuff like surface finds and whatnot. But, you know, finding my first whole point was actually on a shaker table. We were going through some slower parts on the screens and, you know, they're like, hey, jump on this for a little bit. So, you know, sure enough, I did. at first, you know, like I mentioned before, it's almost like being seasick. You're watching that thing just shake and move so much, and you're watching every stone move and every rock move and whatever. You're like, dude, there's no way I'd be able to see one of this stuff. And then, you know, out pops that point. You can see it, and I could barely grab it. You know, it was just bouncing around all over the table. And I was trying to grab it. It was jumping around in between my fingers. Finally, I got a hold of it, looked at it, and I was, you know, pretty excited. Wasn't anything crazy, which will actually be featured on a To the Point segment. Y'all will be able to see it. It's a little Darl point that I had pulled out of that dig. And, you know, it's nothing crazy, but it's memorable.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I guess my most memorable piece is that Montel that we've got a To the Point on. Aside from that, I've been on some just absolutely killer digs with Tanner, some great digs with Mike, great dig with Ray. I mean, every dig I've been on, I've got a point from it that is in this frame. That big Yewa, that's from Ray at Ann's Hill. That's absolutely one of my favorite finds. The big Montel in the center, I hand dug. There's two Castorvilles in there, a big 4-inch squared Castorville missing one ear, and then another just under 4-inch squared Castorville. Same day, same site with Tanner. There's a Darl blade in there. That's from the same dig with Tanner, different days. That same dig, one of my good buddies, Nathan, he pulled the best corner tang I've ever seen from there. Just excellent artifacts come from there, some really good Montels, just insane stuff come out of there. And then as far as San Saba, there's a blade on the top left, little Covington blade, or maybe a work down Harahay, I don't know. I hand dug that at San Saba, actually, the one time I hand dug San Saba. And then in my bird point frame, I've got a couple Perdis from there, and a little shell pendant that's broken. So I've got something from every dig I've been on that I'm happy with. It just takes the effort and repetition and going. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not always sunshine and rainbows, but they're in there. There's an ET in there from Barksdale with Logan. It's on the bottom right. You can't see it. I think the Texas Cash magazine's covering it up. But a little story with that one, and kind of talk the person Logan is. It was the second time I dug Barksdale, and it was getting towards the end of the day. I'm sitting there on the screen alone, and Logan's walking by. You know, he'd been operating on and off all day between him and the other guy. And he comes over and he's talking to me, and, you know, we talk anytime I go to his digs. And I was like, hey, man, hop on screen with me. He's like, no. And as an operator at your own dig, it's kind of frowned upon to be digging at the same time. So, you know, Logan is a true to the core digger. I've seen him on multiple digs that we've, you know, been a part of together. And then he runs his own digs. So I was like, dude, you know, get on the table. I'm not going to complain. I don't think anybody else here is going to complain. If you find something, it's yours. I don't care. I'm not that kind of guy. He gets up to the table and he's like, dude, you know, if I get on here, I'm going to find something. And I was like, yeah, I'm sure you will. And I'm okay with that. Well, we start running through the load and we're just sitting there talking, you know, talking about the day, talking about the dig, stuff that had been coming out, how he was, things like that. Some stuff he had been testing. We get down toward the end of the load and he's got a little bit of dirt left and he swipes and out rolls that ET. And he's like, oh, man. He picks it up. I mean, it's a real nice one. And he's looking at it, and he's like, here, dude, you got to have this. And I was like, no. It's like, it's not mine. You found it. And I'm not like that. You know, you found it. It's yours. I have no hard feelings. I told you to get on the table. That's your point. It's no different than if the other guy was still over here digging right now. It's no different. And he goes, okay, man. So, you know, we kind of talked about it. He put it in his pocket. Finish the load out. He goes talk to some other customers. And anyway, we finish out the day looking at all the points and stuff. And anyway, I'd like started picking stuff up. I don't know. Some point he slipped it into my case that I had with me. And I didn't realize it until we're pretty good ways down the road. I look in there and I seen that ET in there and I was like, daggum, that son of a gun. So good dude. He absolutely didn't have to do it, but it's in there and it's not going anywhere. So I appreciate that, Logan. Definitely didn't have to do that. That's the only not personal find that's in that frame of mine. It's the only not a personal find that I even have in my collection. aside from that, one thing that I did just mention that made me think of a piece of equipment to carry with you is a case of some sort to put your pieces in, whether it be a Riker box, an actual display case. What I carry is a little Harbor Freight, like pistol case that latches.
Mm-hmm.
That works pretty good. So anything to put them in there and protect them. Snuff cans work really good for bird points. Fill them with dirt, put the bird point in there. They work great. Just don't lose your snuff can.
Mm.
But aside from that, that's about all I've got for this one. Christian, you got any other?
No, I mean, pretty much covered everything that I thought of. And, you know, hope that y'all enjoyed the listen. Hope you can get something for it or from it if you actually aren't experienced in doing these kind of things. You know,
do we want to announce anything or anything coming up?
I mean,
no,
not as of now.
Huh?
We'll kind of leave something for the next time for y'all.
Okay, that sounds good. But yeah, I mean, you know, pay digs starting up. We want to see what y'all are finding. We hope y'all are getting out there and enjoying them. Private, whatever, you know, it's time to dig. Everybody's starting it up again. So
yep,
please share them with us. We'd love to see them. You know, we want to add more people to this wall behind us. We want to add more people up here, people that support us. Again, Dancing Dogs, code NATIVE15, all caps. That'll get you 15% off of anything on their website. Christian just got a hat from him. It's called the River Rock. It's got an Andice on the front. Really cool.
Yeah, I'll bring it next time so y'all can see it.
Yeah, we'll make some posts or something. That's the Brindle Bay. I don't know what this is called. I'm calling it the Lucky Roadrunner because it's going to be lucky. I'm very superstitious, by the way. I dig in one set of socks now. They're got flying pigs on them. Lauren got me them for my birthday.
I think I'm going to get some.
Yeah, I wore them all calling season and we did good. So yeah,
I think I need some.
Now, I do wash them. It's not. I'm not one of those guys. But I'll send Christian the link on where to get them.
Yeah.
But for now, that's all I've got. We appreciate everybody. You know, be sure to check out all of our socials. Clearly, you're listening to the podcast.
So. Yep. We appreciate everything that y'all do for us. And y'all make sure you keep living your hobbies.
See y'all later.